What did they do next, Bob?
Well, they both had some minor wounds, and there was a price on Smoke's head. So they took off to the mountains to lay up for a while and lick their wounds and let the heat die down. Except it didn't work out exactly that way. They chanced upon the remains of a wagon train that'd been burned out by Indians and rescued a young woman. Nicole was her name. She was the lone survivor of the attack. There wasn't nothing else they could do, so they took her up into the mountains with them, where they planned a winter. Smoke built them a cabin out of adobe and logs, and they spent 2 winters and a summer in that place, up in the High Lonesome. After that first year, Smoke and Nicole had a kind of unofficial marrying. By the second winter, she had Smoke a son.
Well, I didn't know Jensen had a son.
He doesn't. Now, when the boy was about a year old, Smoke had to go looking for their milk cow that wandered off. When he came back, he found some bounty hunters had tracked him to the cabin and were in there with Nicole and the baby.
Some primitive sense of warning caused Smoke to pull up short of his home. He made a wide circle, staying in the timber back of the creek, and he slipped up to the cabin. Nicole was dead. The acts of the men had grown perverted, and in their haste, her throat had been crushed. Now, as Felter sat by the lean-to outside and watched the valley in front of him, wondering where Smoke had hidden the gold. Inside, Canning scalped Nicole with his skinning knife and tied her bloody hair to his belt. Then he began skinning a breast, thinking he would tan the hide and make himself a nice tobacco pouch.
Oh, goddamn, Canning!
Kid Austin lurched out the back door.
Kids gotta learn. Hey, want a tobacco pouch? Got another titty left.
No thanks. I'm gonna go talk to Felter.
Grissom went out the front door of the cabin. As he walked over to the lean-to, he studied Smoke's tracks. They indicated he had ridden off south, so he would probably return from that direction. But Grissom sensed something was wrong, his years on the Hoot Owl back trail surfacing.
Felter?
Yeah?
Something ain't right.
I feel it too. But what?
I don't know.
Grissom spun as he heard movement behind him. His right hand dipped for his pistol. Felter stepped back into the lean-to. Grissom's palm touched the smooth wooden butt of his pistol as his eyes took in the tall young man standing by the corner of the cabin, a Colt 36 in each hand.
It's Smoke!
Smoke leapt off the porch and ran towards the back of the small cabin. Felter scurried from the lean-to, his fist full of Colts.
He's behind the house!
He slid to a halt and raced back to the water trough, diving behind its protection. Kid Austin, caught in the open behind the cabin, ran for the banks of the creek, panic driving his legs. He leaped for the protection of the sandy embankment, twisting in the air. The ball hit Austin's right buttock and traveled through the left cheek of his butt, tearing out a sizable hunk of flesh. He passed out, overwhelmed by the pain in his ass. Smoke ran for the woodpile and crouched there, recharging his Colts and checking the 44s. Smoke flicked away sweat from his face. He waited. Suddenly, something came sailing out the back door. Smoke felt hot bile build in his stomach. Someone had thrown his baby son outside. The boy had been dead for some time. Smoke fought back sickness.
You want to see what's left of you, woman? I got her hair on my belt and a piece of her hide to tan. We all took a turn or two with her. I think she liked it.
Rage charged through Smoke, but he remained still, crouched behind the thick pile of wood. He willed that rage to cool to controlled, venom-filled fury. He unslung the Big Sharp's buffalo rifle that Preacher had carried for years. The rifle could drop a 2,000-pound buffalo at 600 yards. It could also punch a hole through a small log. Preacher's training kept Smoke cautious. To his rear lay a meadow, void of cover. To his left was a shed, but he knew that was empty, for it was still barred from the outside. The man he'd plugged in the butt was to his right. Several fallen logs would protect him from that direction. Through a chink in the logs, Smoke shoved the muzzle of the Sharps and lined up where he thought he had seen a man move, just to the left of the rear window, where Smoke had framed it out with rough pine planking.
Ah! My arm! I see! He blew off my arm! Ah!
Evans! Oh, I see it!
Cannon ran out the front door of the cabin to the lean-to. He slid down hard behind the water trough.
This ain't working out, Felcher. Grissom, Austin, and now Evans is either dead or dying. The slug from that buffalo gun blowed Evans' arm off. Let's get the hell out of here.
What about Clark and Sam?
They ain't grown men. They can join us or they can go to hell.
All right, let's ride. We'll hide up in them mountains, see which way he rides out, then bushwhack him. Let's go.
Felcher and Canning raced for their horses, hidden in a bend of a creek behind the bank. They kept the cabin between themselves and Smoke as much as possible and bellied down in the meadow the rest of the way. In the creek, a revived Kid Austin crawled upstream, the water red from the wounds in his butt. His Colts were forgotten. They were useless anyway. The powder was wet. All he wanted was to get away. That left the bounty hunters, Clark and Sam, in the cabin.
I'm not fighting. I'm getting out. That ain't no goddamn pilgrim out there.
Oh, the hell with that, Sam. I hope this woman, and I'll kill him and take the 8,000.
Well, that's your damn choice.
Sam raced out the front.
Hey, Jensen! Jensen! Your wife don't look so good now. Not since she got a haircut and one titty skinned.
Outside, the air stank of black powder and blood. Smoke had seen the men ride off into the foothills. He wondered how many were left in the cabin. He remained still, his eyes blazing with fury. He stared at the stiffening form of his son. Inside the cabin, if Clark could have read the man's thoughts, he would have stuck the muzzle of his .44 into his mouth and pulled the trigger. Leaving the Sharps in place, Smoke eased slowly backward, keeping the woodpile in front of him. He slipped down the side of the knoll and ran around to the side of the small hill, then up it to the side of the cabin. The bounty hunter inside was still watching the woodpile, looking at the muzzle of the Sharp stuck through the logs. Smoke eased around to the front of the cabin and looked in. He saw Nicole, saw the torture marks on her, saw the hideousness of the scalping and the skinning knife. He lifted his eyes to the back door where Clark was crouching just to the right of it. Smoke raised his .36. Smoke shot the pistol out of Clark's hand, taking the hand with him. Smoke stepped over Grissom's body. Clark looked up at the tall young man with the burning eyes. Cold fear put a bony hand on his shoulder. For the first time in his evil life, Clark knew what death looked like.
You're gonna make it quick, ain't you?
Not likely.
When Clark came to, he was naked, staked out a mile from the cabin on the plain. Rawhide held his wrists and ankles to thick stakes driven into the ground. A huge ant mound was just inches from him, and Smoke had poured honey all over him.
I don't deserve this. It was Canning that raped your wife first, and it was Canning that scalped her and skinned her breast to make a tobacco pouch with the tanned hide. Jensen, it wasn't me. You hear me? Oh, God. Oh, Jesus, please. I'm a white man. You can't do this to me. What are you, half Apache?
I'm guessing you're not gonna die well.
He didn't. Lazarus shook his head, his brow furrowed with thought.
Well, I see what you mean, Bob. If we fail in our attack, Jensen will hunt us down one by one until he's killed all of us, or one of us kills him.
That's about the size of it, Mr. Kane. I just didn't want you going up against him till you knew what kind of man he is.
Well, thanks for the warning, Bob. I guess the only thing to do is make sure we kill Jensen when we get the chance.
It's that or spend the rest of your life looking back over your shoulder, waiting on him to show up.
About 5 minutes outside of Fontana, Smoke reined Joker to a halt.
If what I've heard about Kane is true,
With his military background, he's gonna have some sentries posted around Fontana that'll warn him we're coming.
What do you want to do, Smoke?
Well, since Joey and I have the most experience at this, we'll take out the sentries. I want the rest of you to ride in a wide circle around the town and try to intercept the wagon of dynamite and ammunition Kane's expecting to arrive today. It should be coming from the north, from Pueblo.
After the others rode off, Smoke pulled his colts out and began to check his loads. Joey did the same.
It's gonna seem like old times riding with you, Smoke.
Yeah. Let's hope it turns out as well this time as it did last time.
Smoke and Joey began to ride a circuit around Fontana, keeping their eyes peeled for any approaching riders. It didn't take them long to attract a couple. Two men rode up, each carrying Winchester rifles in their hands, butts resting on their thighs as they reined up in front of Smoke and Joey. One of the men, dark-skinned with several days' growth of beard, spoke up.
Where are you gents headed?
Smoke glanced at Joey, his lips curled in a lazy smile.
The man wants to know where we're headed, partner.
Yeah, I heard the nosy son of a bitch. What's your name, mister?
The dark-skinned man glanced at the man sitting on the horse next to him, and then back at Joey.
What's it to you?
I just thought it'd be nice to have something to carve on a cross over your grave. Assuming anybody cares enough about your sorry butt to come out here and bury you.
Why, you son of...
I feel kind of bad about not offering them a chance to quit this madness and go on about their way.
That kind of thinking's gonna get you killed, partner. There's not a one of the bunch riding with Kane who's worth 2 seconds of thought. They's all murderers and thieves and such and don't deserve the time of day, much less a chance to shoot us while they's deciding whether to stay or leave.
I guess you're right.
Ain't I always?
The next two sentries, perhaps because they'd heard the shots, or perhaps because they were just more ornery than the first pair, didn't bother to accost Smoke and Joey. They just started blasting away with long guns as soon as they saw them riding by. Luckily for Smoke and Joey, the pair were abysmal shots, and the first volley of bullets whined by harmlessly, other than startling the two gunmen out of a year's growth.
Damn!
Two men sitting on their horses stopped shooting for a moment when they realized the men they were aiming at were doing something crazy. Instead of trying to get away from the hail of bullets, they were galloping at full speed toward them. Julio and Pete continued to fire, the explosions of their rifles making their horses jump and dance in fear, which did nothing to improve their already terrible aim. Joey, who'd spent considerable years after the Civil War riding and shooting from horseback, was under no such handicap. While he was still 50 yards from the attackers, his first slug took the man in the left chest just above his heart. The force of the bullet twisted the man around in his saddle, but it didn't knock him to the ground. Julio Cardenas tried to put his rifle to his shoulder, but before he could, a slug from Smoke's pistol entered the right side of his face and exited out the left, blowing his lower jaw completely off in a split second. Julio fell out of his saddle, his skin the color of night, gasping like a fish out of water as he died. Smoke and Joey rested their broncs as they punched out empty cartridges and reloaded their pistols.
How many left do you think?
If he's going by the rules the rebels used to follow, he's got 8 sentries surrounding his camp. 2 on each point of the compass.
That means we got 4 more to deal with.
At least.
Lewis Longmont was the first to spy the wagon.
There it is!
A man could be seen driving a buckboard, a saddled horse following along behind on a dally rope. Monte Carson was the first to speak as they signaled the wagon to a halt.
Howdy, mister. My name's Monte Carson. I'm the sheriff around here. What's in the back of your wagon?
The driver looked worriedly around at the faces of the men surrounding him.
Some supplies from Garrett's general store over in Pueblo.
What kind of supplies?
What business is it of yours?
Al drew his pistol and crossed his arms on his saddle horn, leaning forward, the barrel of the gun pointing down.
Senor, the man, he asked you very nice. Why you not answer his question? We pronto.
I'm carrying dynamite, gunpowder, and about 200 boxes of shells, 44s, 45s, and a few 36 caliber bullets.
You figuring on going to war, mister?
No, these are for a Mr. Kane in the town of Fontana. Now, why don't you just let me ride on into town and do what I'm being paid to do?
I can't do that. Town of Fontana is under quarantine.
Quarantine?
Yeah. Seems there's a disease in that town that's gonna kill everybody in it.
What is it? The pox?
Nope. It's a disease called greed. It is being spread by Lazarus Kane, and it has infected everyone in the town.
Greed ain't fatal.
It is in this case, my friend.
If you gentlemen will allow me, I'll just get on my horse and head on back to Pueblo.
That'd be just fine.
Monty smiled, looking around at the group of men with him.
My friends and I will make sure Mr. Kane gets all the bullets and dynamite in your wagon. One way or another, you have my word on it.
Nate Bridges and Will Calloway were riding sentry for Lazarus when Nate stopped his horse and pulled a small canvas sack out of his shirt pocket and began to build himself a cigarette. Will stopped his horse, too, and pulled out his canteen to get a drink of water. Nate dipped his head to lick the paper around his tobacco.
What the hell?
Nate saw the headless body of his friend lying on the ground. He jerked his reins and whirled his horse, saving his life as the bullet from Joey Sharp's big 50 hit him in the shoulder. The force of the slug almost unseated Nate, but he managed to keep his balance and leaned over the neck of his mount and spurred it toward Fontana as fast as the animal could run.
Damn, that's the second one.
Joey reloaded the Sharps.
That might not be so bad. Let him tell Kane what happened. And when the other sentries don't show up, and he realizes what happened to them, it'll cause him some confusion.
Why is that good? I thought we wanted the element of surprise.
We did. But that wasn't going to happen with us having to kill all the sentries. Sooner or later, he was going to realize he was under attack anyway. Now, we'll let him stew one in a while, wondering just who and how many are after him.
Well, if that's the plan, we need to get those other two sentries pronto.
After Joey put the Sharps in his saddle boot, they rode north, the direction of the remaining two sentries. Bill Boudreau and Francois Thibodeau, two friends on the run from New Orleans for killing five men in a riverboat gambling feud, were riding the northern sentry post.
Say, Bill, here come two men. What do you want to do?
Let them come. Then when they get here, we'll kill them, mon ami.
Why not just tell them to leave?
Cause Monsieur Kane. He'd be plenty mad if he find out. He say, kill anyone who come, so we kill these two men. Unless you want to go to Monsieur Kane and tell him you be too soft for this job.
No, I agree. They must die.
As soon as Smoke and Joey got within 30 yards of the two men they were approaching, they saw the men go for their guns. Without hesitating, Smoke and Joey filled their hands with iron, firing on the two sentries before they could clear leather. Smoke hit Bill Boudreau in the heart and throat with two shots. Joey's shots hit Francois in the stomach and left arm, doubling him over his saddle horn. After a few seconds, he toppled to the side to fall to the ground.
Help me! Dear God!
You got a gun. Help yourself. Me.
Then Joey and Smoke rode off toward Fontana's town limits, where they planned to meet with their friends. Nate Bridges made it to just in front of the Dog Hole Saloon in Fontana before impending shock from a loss of blood caused him to faint and fall off his horse. Donnie Donahue was just coming from the outhouse when he saw Nate hit the dirt.
Hey, everybody, come quick!
When he got next to Nate, Donnie saw almost his entire shirt soaked with blood.
Oh, Jesus!
Several cowboys burst out of the bat wings of the dog hole and ran to stand over Nate. Finally, Three Fingers Sonny Torres, who had seen and treated more gunshot wounds than most doctors, knelt next to Nate and pulled out a large knife. He stuck the blade in the front of Nate's shirt and sliced it open. There was a hole as big as a man's fist in the front of Nate's shoulder. Most of the bleeding had stopped, or at least slowed to a trickle, and there were no arterial spurters. Sonny Torres rolled Nate up on his side and looked at his back.
Here's where the bullet enter.
Torres let him roll back.
And that is where she exit.
What the hell kind of gun did that?
A large caliber, maybe a buffalo gun of some sort, like a Sharps.
Lazarus Kane strode through the crowd of men, parting them with his hands as if he were Moses parting the Red Sea.
What the hell's going on here?
Pierce, one of our men went and got himself shot.
Is that Nate Bridges lying there?
Yes, I was just coming out of the shitter when I saw him falling off of his horse.
Torres glanced up from where he still kneeled next to Nate.
Looks like he was shot with a long gun of some kind, Mr. Kane. Probably a Charles or something like that.
Damn. Has anyone seen any of the other sentries? Who was riding with Nate anyway?
I believe it was Will Calloway. Leastways, I seen the two of them riding out of town together this morning.
I need some men to ride out and check on the sentries. Wheeler, you ride north. Gonzalez, you take the south end. Tucker, you go east. And Samuels, I want you to ride to the west. Men, I don't know if this means anything or not, but ride with your guns loose and watch your backsides. We may have some problems coming our way.
Within 2 hours, Lazarus had gotten the bad news, and he was having a meeting with his most trusted men in the dog hole. They were seated at their favorite table in the corner, and several bottles of whiskey were being passed around.
We've got some trouble. The men I sent out found every one of our sentries dead. Bodies scattered all over the countryside.
Were all of them killed with long guns?
No, Joe. It appeared as if some were shot at close range with pistols.
Did they find any other bodies, other than our chaps?
Lazarus shook his head slowly.
That means whoever did this is good. Those sentries were hard men. I don't see some pilgrims riding up and killing them.
You're right, Blackie. Whoever is out there is a force to be reckoned with.
Can't hardly be the army, then. Them boys are so green they probably shot one or two of their own men themselves.
No, I don't think this is the authorities. If it was the army or marshals, we'd have heard from them by now. This is something different.
Well, then who could it be, boss?
I don't know, Tom.
Do you suspect it could be Smoke Jensen? Maybe Joey Wells warned him after all.
King Johansson absently fingered the handle of the machete hanging on his belt.
Well, I doubt it. If Jensen knew we were coming and that we'd had over 50 men, why wouldn't he just notify the army or the territory marshals? There'd be no need for him to even get involved.
I fear you may have underestimated this Jensen, gentlemen. From what I have heard and read, he is a man who does not suffer tribulation well.
What's that supposed to mean, Jeremy? Speak English, will you?
I believe we were on Mr. Jensen's ranch the day we arrived here.
So?
Do you remember what happened that day?
Lazarus thought a minute, then looked slowly up at Jeremy.
We shot some young ranch hand.
It is merely my supposition that perhaps Mr. Smoke Jensen did not take kindly to us killing one of his men. Perhaps this is his way of telling us that.
Do you really think a man of Jensen's reputation would go to war over losing one of his hired hands?
From what I have heard, though the stories are admittedly exaggerated, Jensen would go to war if you scuffed his boots.
Well, if this is Jensen and his men, it won't be so bad. As a matter of fact, it's probably better if he comes to us rather than us fighting him on his own ground.
What do you mean?
Well, this way, there won't be no chance of us riding into no traps or ambushes.
Shall wonder how many men he's got riding with him.
Really doesn't matter, old chap. Once they ride into town, they're all as good as dead.
I want you men to get the boys scattered out all over town. Have them get ready for an attack. Post some on roofs, some in high-placed rooms where they'd have good line of fire. You know the drill. Tell them to get ready. Smoke Jensen's coming to town, and we're gonna throw him a party.
Smoke and Joey circled around Fontana until they found where their friends were waiting. They'd made a campfire and were cooking some beans and fatback and heating up some biscuits Sally had sent along in a paper sack. Louis Longmont looked up from his coffee cup and smiled.
I see the sentries were no match for the team of Jensen and Wells.
Not even close. The boys just thought they knew how to fight till they ran into a twister called Smoke Jensen.
Smoke inclined his head at Pearly, who was sitting on his haunches next to the fire, a plate on his knees piled high with food.
I might have known you boys would be eating, since Pearly's riding with you.
Golly, Smoke. You just never know when you're going to get a chance to eat when you're fighting outlaws and such. I figure it'd be best to eat while there weren't nothing going on.
Don't worry, Pearly. I was just funning with you. It is always a good idea to eat before a fight. You're right. There's no telling just how long we're going to be tied up in this little fracas.
We may have a little trouble, boys.
How's that, Joey?
One of the sentries got away. He was carrying some of my lead in him, but we figure he might have made it back to Fontana to warn the others we're coming.
Damn! Es muy malo!
Oh, it's not all that bad, Luis. In fact, it really won't make a hell of a lot of difference. Even if they suspect someone has targeted them, they won't know who or how many, nor will they have much time to make preparations for our arrival.
Yeah, that's the way I figure it, Luis. In fact, it might be better if they had a little time to worry about just who's on their trail.
Yeah, worried men don't always think as good as men without a lot on their mind. I'd a lot rather trail a man who knows he's being trailed and is spending a lot of time looking back over his shoulder instead of thinking about how he can get the drop on me.
Smoke walked over to the wagon and began to peer inside it.
What do we got here?
Longmont stepped over to lean on the edge of the buckboard.
Looks like Kane was planning on going to war with you in the town of Big Rock, Smoke. He's got enough ammunition and gunpowder and dynamite in this wagon to cause quite a ruckus. If he'd managed to get it, that is.
Hey, you boys did a good job. If Kane had been able to acquire this wagon, we'd have had our hands full, all right.
Now, our only problem is to figure out how we can make the best use of this stuff ourselves.
Oh, I think I have an idea on that subject, Monty.
Smoke took his sketch of Fontana out of his saddlebag and spread it on top of the boxes in the buckboard. With a pencil, he pointed to various areas of the town, dividing up his forces, as commanders have been doing before upcoming battles for centuries.
Luis, you and Al are used to working as a team. I want you two to approach the town from the south. Take as much dynamite as you can carry. Tie together two sticks at a time. When you begin your approach, light a cigar and keep it in your mouth to set the fuses off when you're ready to toss the dynamite. Cal, I want you and Pearlie to stay together. You're still not up to full strength, so I don't want you to try anything too strenuous. I'm going to station you on the road out of town in case some of the outlaws decide it's getting too hot in Fontana and try to make tracks for someplace cooler.
You mean you're going to keep me out of the action so I won't get shot again, don't you?
That's not it at all, Cal. Smoke's got to put each man where he can do the best for the team, because we're so outnumbered.
Now, Pearlie's right, Cal. Your job is just as important as anyone else's. If any of the gunnies get away, they're liable to come back later and do us damage. Your job, and Pearlie's, is to make sure that doesn't happen.
Smoke turned to the remainder of the men.
Luis, I'd like you and Monty to attack from the north, and Johnny and George to come in from the east. Joy and I will go in first from the west, from the back of town.
What do you mean, go in first?
Smoke pointed to the tins of gunpowder lying in the buckboard.
We're going to sneak in and plant a few of those where they'll do the most good. Your signal to attack will be when you see them go off.
What if Kane's man managed to get you before that happens?
Then you'll hear the gunshots. Either way, it'll be time for you boys to do your best to blow those bastards to hell and gone.
Smoke took a tin of bootblack out of his saddlebag and scooped some out on his fingers before handing the can to Joey.
Put some of that on your face, Joey. It'll help keep us from being seen while we skulk around tonight.
Smoke smeared boot polish around his eyes and mouth until his face was as black as the night.
If things go well, Joey and I should have the gunpowder set up within about 30 minutes. Give us 10 minutes more, just in case. If you haven't heard from us by then, come in with guns blazing.
Joey finished applying his boot black and looked up.
Just be careful. If you see a couple fellas with black faces, make sure you don't blast them till you see who they are.
Smoke took two black dusters from his saddlebag. He threw one to Joey and put the other one on. As the two men stepped into their saddles, Pearlie touched the brim of his hat.
Look, Smoke. Joey.
Son, luck don't have nothing to do with it. It's who's the meanest gonna survive. The other's gonna be buzzard bait.
Smoke and Joey slipped off their horses and left them ground reined 50 yards from the first buildings on the outskirts of Fontana. Smoke glanced at the sky. Luckily, there was a half moon. The fall weather had brought storm clouds scudding in over the mountaintops, which kept the moonlight to a minimum. Smoke handed Joey one of the canvas bags full of tins of gunpowder, and he threw another over his shoulder. Stepping lightly, crouching over to minimize their outline against the horizon, they walked quickly into town. With their dark faces and the black dusters flaring out behind them, they looked like strange, malevolent shadows moving in the night. Slipping down an alleyway, Smoke peered around the corner of the building he was behind and looked toward the Dog Hole Saloon.
What is it? It's just past 7 o'clock. I don't see any activity at the saloon.
That means they're expecting us. Otherwise, they'd all be in there getting liquored up.
Smoke took one of the tins of gunpowder out of his sack and placed it next to the corner of the building. While getting ready for this evening, he'd had Pearly and Cal put blasting caps and fuses into the cans, and Lewis Longmont had tied white strips of cloth to the tops of the cans so they'd be easily visible from a distance. Easing out of the alley now, keeping close to the buildings, Smoke and Joey went in separate directions, each planting tins of the black powder along the way. Bobby Barlow turned to Christopher Tucker.
Hey, Chris, you got any tobacco?
The two men had been riding together since Manassas, and Bobby had been smoking Chris's tobacco since way before then.
You know we ain't supposed to smoke while we're on guard duty, Bobby.
Guard duty? Hell! There ain't nobody coming tonight. It's all in Kane's head.
Chris passed over a small sack with his Bull Durham in it. The two were sitting in a darkened room that used to be the town doctor's office, watching out the front window. They'd been placed there by Blackie Jackson to keep an eye on the main street of Fontana.
Looky there, Chris. There goes one of those darkies walking down the boardwalk as bold as brass.
So?
So? Didn't Blackie Jackson tell us everybody was gonna be undercover tonight, waiting for the attack?
Yeah, he did.
Well, I better tell that dumbass to get off the street then. Hey! Bartholomew! Is that you?
Bobby figured it had to be Bartholomew Winter, who was the shortest of the three black men riding with him. The black-faced figure turned his head and took two quick steps towards Bobby.
What are you doing?
Anything wrong, Bobby?
The short man stepped back from Bobby. Before he hit the ground, Joey's Arkansas toothpick was slicing across Christopher Tucker's throat. Joey walked to the window and placed one of the tins of powder on the windowsill, where it could be seen from the street. Then he vanished silently into the darkness. As Smoke straightened from placing his last tin of gunpowder next to a wall, a harsh voice came from the blackness behind him.
What do you think you're doing, nigger?
Riley Samuel smiled as he stood there next to Donnie Donahue in the doorway to the old dry goods store.
Yeah, you boys too ignorant to know we're supposed to be off the street tonight?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, both those ex-Confederate soldiers were grinning, their teeth just glowing white in the scant moonlight as they took out some of their frustration on what appeared to be one of the black men riding with Kane. When the figure stood up, Riley's mouth dropped open. None of the Negro troops were this big. This man had to be well over 6 feet tall.
What you got there, boy?
The black man's teeth gleamed in a wide smile.
It's called a greener, boy.
South of Fontana, Luis Carbone leaned over and lit the cigar sticking out of Al Martin's mouth.
Well, amigo, it is time to ride.
Time to ride and kill, compadre.
They leaned over the necks of their mounts and put spurs to their flanks, heading straight into hell. In the north, Lewis Longmont stuck out his hand to Monte Carson.
You ready, partner?
It'll be a pleasure to do battle with you, Mr. Longmont.
The two gunfighters rode toward the town at an easy canter, their hands filled with iron, and their eyes flicking back and forth, looking for targets. On the east side of town, Johnny North looked at George Hampton as they moved their horses toward town.
George, don't you go getting yourself killed tonight. My daughter'd never forgive me if I let that happen.
Johnny, neither would I. Neither would I.
Lazarus Kane jerked his head to the side.
Oh, damn! It has begun!
Kane spoke to Blackie Jackson, who sat next to him in the saloon. Blackie nodded and reached over to turn off the lantern hanging on the wall next to him, plunging the room into darkness. The rest of Kane's personal team were scattered around the saloon and on the second floor and the roof of the building, waiting for the attack. As Al and Luis rode into town, Pedro Gonzalez and Jamie Sanchez rose up on the roof of a boarding house and began to fire down at him. Pedro's second shot hit Al's horse in the neck. Luis put the fuse on a bundle of dynamite to a cigar, and when it ignited, he threw it onto the roof behind the shooters. Al scrambled on hands and knees, grabbed his sack of dynamite off a saddle horn, and then ran toward the nearest building, trying to get off the street. Two black men stepped out of the building, guns in their hands. Al dropped the bundle he was holding. When he saw their eyes, followed the bag as he dropped it, his hands flashed to his pistols. On the east side of town, Coronado Valentine and Pedro Gutierrez were holed up in a barn next to the livery stable with Dick Wheeler and Billy Bow. They watched silently as buildings began to explode and burn all over town. Just then, they saw two men come galloping down the street. Wheeler was just about to tell the other men to hold their fire until they got closer, when Pedro Gutierrez snapped off a shot with his pistol. The bullet took George Hampton in the right chest, spinning him around and knocking him to the ground. Johnny North, fearing the worst, spurred his horse directly toward the barn as fast as he could ride. He rode into the building through the doors, both hands full of iron. Pedro Gutierrez whirled around. Johnny shot him in the face. Dick Wheeler didn't get off a shot before he was hit in the neck and chest. But Billy Bauer managed to fire twice, one of his bullets notching Johnny's left ear. Johnny shot him in the gut, doubling him over and knocking him to his knees, where he knelt as if in some sort of grotesque prayer. Coronado Valentine aimed his guns at Johnny's back, earing back the hammers and grinning over the sight. Suddenly, he felt a blow between his shoulder blades. He whirled around in time to see George Hampton standing there, blood all over his shirt front, looking at him over the barrel of a Colt 45 that was still smoking. Valentine grinned and died. Johnny jumped down off his horse and ran to grab George just as he began to fall.
Thanks, George. You saved my life.
My future wife never forgive me if I let her daddy get killed.
Then George fainted. Three Finger Sammy Torres was holed up in the hotel building with the ex-Dalton gang members Jimmy, Jake, Sonny, and Clyde. They were on the second floor, stationed at windows in various rooms where they had a good view of the street. When Three Finger Sammy saw two black-clad figures running across the street toward the saloon, he opened fire, pocketing dirt around the running men, but missing with all his shots. Luckily, Monty and Louis Longmont saw the muzzle flash from his rifle and reined up their horses before they got to the hotel. Jumping to the ground, they pulled pistols and eased on down the alley and around the corner and into the back door of the building. Finding no one on the first floor, they began to climb the stairs, eyes staring upward for any sign of a hostile body. They just reached the second floor landing when Jake stepped out of a doorway, checking his pistol to see if it was fully loaded. He looked up to find four barrels pointed at him. When Sonny and Clyde burst out of their doors, Monty and Louis crouched and began to fire away. Jimmy peered around the edge of a doorway, trying to see through the smoke and haze before he ventured out. Monty put two bullets through the door, and Jimmy slowly fell out into the hallway, his eyes showing surprise at the events of the evening. Three Finger Sammy Torres walked out of his room, his hands held high.
I give up. I surrender.
Mister. It's not going to be that easy. You dealt yourself into this hand, so ante up, or die where you stand.
Do what and shoot a man who surrendered, will you?
If he won't, I sure as hell will. Fill your hand, outlaw, or I'll shoot you down like a dog.
Torres scowled and grabbed for his pistol. Kane peered out of a front window of the saloon, watching as the town was destroyed around him. Al Martin and Luis Carbone were walking down the street, calmly throwing dynamite onto roofs and into windows, blowing men and pieces of men to hell and gone. Johnny North, after dressing George Hampton's wound and making him lie down in the barn, was walking down the street from the other direction, using a rifle to fire into the tins of gunpowder Joey and Smoke had secreted along the boardwalk. Buildings on both sides of the street were exploding in flames, which were spreading, fueled by fall winds blowing in from the mountains. Monte Carson and Louis Longmont managed to make it out onto the street before Al Martine shot into the gunpowder in the lobby. Floyd Devers, Walter Blackwell, Tad Younger, and Johnny Sampson, all ex-members of Bloody Bill Anderson's gang, were hiding in one of the boarding houses.
Man, it don't look good out there. Half the damn town's burning already.
Yeah, let's get the hell out of here.
The four men ran out the back door and jumped on their horses. They rode down a back road out of town. Meanwhile, Smoke and Joey made their way toward the saloon, figuring that was where Kane and his cadre of men would hold up. King Johansson and Pig Iron Carlton leaned over the parapet of the saloon roof, searching for someone to shoot. Johansson leveled his rifle at Carbone, taking aim. A bullet plowed into the board he was resting his elbow on, sending a shower of splinters several inches long into his face. He stood up, clawing at his right eye, which had a long piece of wood protruding from it. Joey levered another shell into his rifle. Carlton leaned over. His second slug gouged a chunk of meat from Joey's left shoulder. Smoke leveled his greener. In the saloon, Blackie Jackson leaned over to Lazarus.
You don't look good, boss. Let's hightail it out of town and live to fight another day.
Have you got the horses tied out back like I told you?
Jackson nodded. Lazarus jumped to his feet and hurried toward the door.
Then let's make tracks.
Curly Joe Ventrilo, Tom behind the Deuce's Cartwright, and Jeremy Brett were left to face Smoke and Joey alone in the saloon. Smoke and Joey slipped through the bat wings and stepped to the side, each with their backs against the wall, letting their eyes adjust to the gloom in the room. Ventrilo, Brett, and Cartwright walked out onto the second floor landing, looking down at Smoke and Joey over the railing.
I don't suppose you chaps would allow us to ride out of here, would you?
Not likely.
Ventrilo spread his hands wide.
But we have you outnumbered! You don't have a chance of killing all three of us before one of us gets you!
You fellas called this dance. Now someone's gotta pay the band. Jerk that six killer and go to work.
The five men drew, and Smoke and Joey's hands moved so fast it was almost a blur. Smoke put one in Brett's chest, another in Carlton's neck. Joey put a slug in Ventrilo's face, and another in Carlton's stomach.
Kane's getting away!
Smoke and Joey ran toward the livery to get horses to follow the outlaw leader. Pearlie and Cal were watching the sky over Fontana turn orange and red in the reflected glow of burning buildings.
Damn it, Pearlie! We ought to be there to help Smoke out.
Yeah, I know, Cal, but I aim to do what Smoke said. As hard as it is to miss the action.
Shh! I hear horses coming.
The two men got down off the buckboards where they'd been sitting and slipped the hammer thongs off their pistols. Four men came galloping up, reining in when they saw the road blocked by a wagon and two men standing in front of it.
Get your wagon out of our way!
You know who that galoot is, Pearlie?
No.
It's the man who shot his friend Bloody Bill Anderson in the back to save his own skin.
Looks like he's turning tail and running from another fight, don't it, Cal?
Sure does.
Sweat began to form on Blackwell's forehead.
You men get out of our way or we'll be forced to gun you down.
Both Cal and Pearlie grinned.
Let's dance.
Six men went for their guns simultaneously. Cal was a shade faster than Pearlie and he got off the first shot, hitting Blackwell in the chest before he even cleared leather. Pearlie shot a fraction of a second later. His slug taking Johnny Sampson in the left eye. Floyd Devers fired once, just as Cal's second shot got him in the stomach. Cal fired again into his right ear. Tad Younger and Pearlie fired at the same time. Younger taking one in the neck, and Pearlie taking one in the left shoulder. as cordite and gun smoke swirled in a thick cloud, and echoes of gunfire reverberated off distant mountains. Pearly and Cal stood looking at each other.
Well, I'll be darned. Looks like some of your natural attraction for lead has rubbed off onto me.
Cal removed his hat and stuck his finger through the hole Deaver's bullet had left in it.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Blackie Jackson and Lazarus Kane slowed their horses to a walk, letting them blow after their long ride from Fontana.
You think any of the boys got out alive?
Doubtful. Not if Jensen's as good as they say he is.
He is, and they didn't.
Shit!
Jackson and Kane whirled around to find Smoke and Joey Wells sitting on horses just behind them.
Well, well. So it's come down to this, huh?
That's right. You came after me. And now you've found me. Let's settle this.
Blackie Jackson, thinking Smoke's attention was fixed on Lazarus, went for his pistol. He was mistaken. Lazarus eyed the tall figure dressed in buckskins as they faced each other across the mountain meadow. His hands tensed above the walnut grips of his holstered revolvers, pistols that had killed dozens of times before.
You're no match for me, Jensen! I'll kill you before you can clear leather!
That hasn't been decided yet. You reach for them guns, and one of us is gonna die.
Something stirred inside Lazarus Kane. A chilly feeling he'd never known before, forming a knot in his belly. He looked down at Blackie Jackson, lying dead as a stone where Smoke Jensen and Joey Wells had killed him as casually as swatting a fly.
You can't be that good!
Only one way to find out. Go for your guns, and we'll settle this. I'm tired of all this banter. You're wasting a hell of a lot of my time.
I never was one to let a fella back me down.
As Kane grabbed for his gun, he saw Jensen's hand moving almost faster than his eyes could follow. Next thing he knew, he was flat on his back, looking up at stars and a moon half hidden behind scurrying clouds. He reached into his coat pocket over his heart and took out the Bible his father had given him. Just above the bullet embedded in it was a hole. He smiled grimly.
God damn!
On the way back to Fontana, Joey glanced over at Smoke.
We're gonna have to get together more often, Smoke. Life's been getting plumb dull without you around.
Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man 24, Guns of the Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1999, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Drew Kopas, Tim Getman, Elizabeth Jernigan, David Coyne, James Konachek, Michael Glenn, Joe Brack, Stephen Carpenter, Tim Carlin, Richard Rowan, Paul Fidalgo, Dylan Lynch, Christopher Graybill, Andy Clements, Johann Detweiler, and Thomas Penny. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and Smoke Jensen theme music by Johann Detweiler. Additional music by Johann Detweiler and Brian Patton. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Guns of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, The Last Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles and Sidewinder series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers series, all available in graphic audio and road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in Graphic Audio. We appreciate it. Available now in Graphic Audio.
There they go! After all! Let's tar and feather the bastard!
Oh, shit. Run! It don't look like our last night at Independence is gonna be a peaceful one at all!
Preacher, fate has led you to us, sir. Is there any chance you'd consider accepting my proposition?
What do you mean about coming along with your wagon train to Santa Fe?
Indeed. I've heard it said that you probably know more about the country west of the Mississippi than any man alive.
Wagons ho!
Martin!
What's wrong, Preacher?
Something's been following us, and I am sick and tired of it. I'm gonna go find out what it is.
Somebody bring a light!
I know you all want to know what happened. So do I. Let's wait for that light. Everybody just step back and give him some room now. Who is it?
His name was Hammond. Ben Hammond. My God, what could have done that to him?
I don't know. Some sort of animal.
Now, I bet you're wondering why I didn't just go ahead and kill you.
You know, I don't waste my time wondering about what loco snakes like you do or don't do.
Oh, I'm tired of having to worry about you people popping up to cause trouble for me. Now that I got y'all here, I'm gonna finish you off once and for all. We got you all lined up here like targets. So that's what we're gonna do. We're gonna have some target practice. We're gonna shoot away little pieces of you and see how long we can keep you alive.
Son of a bitch!
What is it?
Cyclone! A big one!
My God, is it headed toward us?
It appears to be! It's hard to say, though, the way those things skip around.
What can we do?
If you're a praying man, I'd get busy at it. And if you ain't, this just might be a good time to start.
Don't you dare miss The First Mountain Man 17, Preacher's Assault. Available now in Graphic Audio.
Tell me, Kip, if you've done bad things your whole life, but you die doing something good, do you think that makes up for all the bad?
No.
Me neither.
But it's better than nothing. Orholam is merciful.
Wonder if you'll say that after they're done with your village.
Gavin Guile is the Prism, the most powerful man in the world. He is High Priest and Emperor, a man whose power, wit, and charm are all that preserves a tenuous peace. A peace that is slowly rotting from the inside out.
This is all that's left of what was once a great civilization. Statues of great men. Broken by the pygmies who followed. Let me tell you something you already know. Something that all of you have believed, but no one dared to say. The wrong Guile won the Prism's war. They killed him because they were worried he would change everything. They feared him because Dazen Guile wanted to free us. Dazen knew that light cannot be changed.
As darkness slowly encroaches upon the land, Gavin receives a mysterious letter.
I'm dying, Gavin. It's time you meet your son, Kip. Lena.
As Gavin races to find his son, he learns of a new and dangerous threat to his empire. A man who calls himself King.
Your time is finished. Yours and the Chromarians. You're done! Light cannot be chained. Know this, Prism. We will take back what you've stolen. The horrors of your reign are almost at an end. And when it ends, I will be there. This, I swear!
With the death of his empire looming, Gavin will be forced to wage a war on multiple fronts. But little does he know, his assassin may be lurking right before his very eyes.
You're a stupid, stupid boy, Kip. But maybe a dull sword can go where a sharp one wouldn't be allowed. Don't you forget this. Don't listen to him, you hear me? He's a liar. You will not fail me in this, Kip. You learn, and then you kill him.
Yes, Mother?
Kip, if you ever loved me, avenge me. Swear it by your worthless soul, Kip.
I swear to avenge you, Mother, by my very soul.
Don't miss the beginning of the end in Brent Week's critically acclaimed new series, The Lightbringer Trilogy. Book 1, The Black Prism, Parts 1 through 3. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.